WMTR.
The views and nutritional advice expressed by Dr. Rocco's are not intended to be a substitute for conventional medical service. The following sound advice program was paid for by Eagle Rock Nutrition. The views and opinions expressed are not necessarily those of the staff, management, and advertisers of WMTR. It is always advisable to consult a professional before making a major medical decision.
Time now for Eat Right with Laura. Here's Dr. Laura Rocco's.
Hey, everybody. Happy 4th of July. Welcome to Eat Right with Laura. My name is Laura Rocco's, and I am the owner of Eagle Rock Nutrition, an integrative healthcare practice providing dietary and lifestyle intervention strategy for disease prevention and health maintenance. So today's show is called The Bittersweet Taste of Diabetes, and I'm going to give you a little tutorial on how our body manages sugar and why we ultimately become, some of us become diabetic. So in order for you to understand like how our body regulates our blood sugar, I have to start with like where we get sugar from, all right? So sugar starts with photosynthesis, and I know you don't really want to hear something, anything too sciencey, but I just bear with me, because even when I go through this explanation with my 9-year-old, I do travel to school sometimes, the 9-year-olds love it, all right? So just think about, like, where does sugar come from? So sugar comes from plants, and the plants have roots, right? And they drink up the water. And the cool thing about plants is that they consume carbon dioxide, right, which is bad. You know carbon dioxide is not good for you, right? So the plants take up the carbon dioxide, all right, and what do they give us in return? So with the help from the sun, right, with help from the sun and the chlorophyll that's in their leaves, they make sugar. They make glucose. And the other thing that's really good is they give off oxygen. So that's why it's really good to have lots of plants, you know, around your house and in your house, because they take out the carbon dioxide that's bad for you, all right, and they give off oxygen that's good for you. And on top of everything else, they make food. All right, this is really where all your carbohydrates come from. They come from plants. And then think about it, all right? So the carbohydrates are in the plants, right? And then, like, the animals, like the cows, they, like, eat the plants, right? And then they make milk, right? And that's, there's carbohydrate in the milk, right? So you're getting carbohydrates just about everywhere. All right, so let's talk about, like, when you have, like, a bowl of sugar on your kitchen table, where does that sugar come from? All right, so you probably haven't given much thought to this, but sugar comes from two sources, two kinds of plants. All right, so there's sugar cane, which is that tall, stalky stuff that you find in the fields in, say, Louisiana, right? And then there's sugar beets, right, which is a root crop. It grows underneath the ground, looks totally different from sugar cane. So the difference between sugar cane and sugar beets is pretty interesting, all right? Sugar cane, the cane sugar, right, that is not genetically modified. So the DNA of sugarcane has not been manipulated, whereas sugar beets are genetically modified. So if you're like a label reader and you want to focus on non-GMO ingredients, always look for the package that says either pure cane sugar or organic sugar. That means the sugar comes from sugar cane. If it just says sugar, it means that it comes from sugar beets. Now, I will have another lecture on the implication of GMO, but not today. All right, just, you know, if you're a label reader and you want to focus on non-GMO ingredients, look for sugar cane or organic sugar. All right, so how does the body metabolize this sugar? All right, so the white stuff that's on your table, right, that's actually sucrose, right, and that's made from two molecules, one molecule of glucose and one molecule of fructose. So when I give these lectures, I have like a little picture of a boy and a girl, and I just think of them, think of the glucose and the fructose as a little boy and a little girl, and they're holding hands, and they are one single compound. All right, so in addition to that white stuff that sits sitting on your table, where else do you find, you know, sucrose? All right, it's also, so sucrose is also brown sugar that you bake with, that you bake cookies with, confectioner's sugar, that sugar in the raw that you think is really, you know, so much better, not really, maple syrup, and molasses. So these are all different, you know, forms of sucrose. They all have the same, we're going to talk about glycemic index. They all have the same glycemic index, except that anything that's brown, any, you know, the brown sugar, the sugar in the raw, the maple syrup, the molasses, it's only slightly better in that all that brown stuff, those are minerals, and minerals are typically good for you. So, you know, that sugar in the raw that you think is so much better, it's only better insofar as that you're getting a few more, it's less processed and you're getting those minerals. But all these things have the same glycemic index. So if you do have a problem regulating your blood sugar, then just know that one of these is not going to be better for you in particular than any other form. All right. So of the glucose and of the fructose, how does that differ? All right. So, all right, this is where I want you to pay attention. So glucose, right, is the only sugar that your body uses to make energy, all right? So that's the one that you need to have on board. So is there anything that you actually eat that's just glucose? There is, and you're probably going to eat some today, all right? So corn syrup, all right, is pure glucose. We use that to make pies like pecan pie, which you also eat at Thanksgiving. But corn syrup is pure glucose. So if you, when you eat like a pie that like that, like, you know, pecan pie with the corn syrup, that's really going to spike your blood sugar because it's pure glucose. It's going to go right into the blood, and that's what your body's going to want to use to make energy. All right, we'll talk about how much you should be eating in a minute. All right, and then there's something else called brown rice syrup. So that's something that, like, people in my circle, my healthy circle, they talk about brown rice syrup supposedly being a little bit better for you. That's two molecules of glucose stuck together. In my opinion, it still raises your blood sugar the same amount as the corn syrup, but your body has to work a little bit harder to do that. So it's only subtly better, but I wouldn't say that it's any panacea of health. Okay, and now we're going to talk about fructose, all right, the other part of the sucrose. So fructose is really interesting in that it's twice as sweet as glucose. So think about it. If you like it, actually put your finger in the corn syrup that's only glucose, it would be sweet. You would think it was sweet. All right, now, all right, so fructose is found in fruit, and it's the other half of sucrose, and I'm going to talk about some other sources. But something like agave, that's spelled A-G-A-V-E, if you don't know what that is, it looks like honey. All right. If you stuck your finger in agave, agave is pure fructose. So do the taste test comparing like corn syrup to agave. You would see that agave is much sweeter. It's twice as sweet as glucose. All right. So if you do like to use agave, maybe one of the benefits is that you use less because it's sweeter. All right. So we talked about sucrose, and then we talked about glucose alone, and then the fructose alone, all right? And then there's some other things that you consume that have both things, glucose and fructose, all right? But they're not together in a single molecule. So think about the little boy and the little girl. I was thinking about the little girl as fructose because the girl is sweeter, right? So think about the two of them, but not holding hands, so not together. So what are some sources of food that you eat that contains glucose and fructose separate, you know, that are not in one molecule? So honey. So where do we get honey from? So honey, right? Honey comes from bees, so they fly into the flowers and they eat the nectar. The bees eat the nectar, right? And then they spit it out. And when they spit out the nectar, right, they regurgitate the nectar. They digest the sugar in the nectar and you end up with separate molecules of glucose and fructose. Okay, so now the other thing, you know, while I'm on the topic of foods that have glucose and fructose, the next thing that I'm going to talk about is high fructose corn syrup. All right, so where does that come from? So high fructose corn syrup. So it starts from corn syrup, obviously, right? And we enzymatically modify that corn syrup so that some of that glucose, I just told you before that the corn syrup is pure glucose, so some of that glucose is enzymatically, sort of chemically converted to fructose. And I also just told you that fructose is twice as sweet as glucose, right? So this is like an engineering marvel because we've just taken something that's sweet and made it even sweeter. So what's the benefit of that? Why is taking something that's already sweet and making it even sweeter so good, you know, for the food industry, basically? Since it's sweeter, right, you need less of it. Right? And so then you can put it in everything and the manufacturers can save a little money because they don't need to put so much of the sweetener in it. And this is really funny. When I learned about high fructose corn syrup, that was in my very first class in food science at Rutgers, right? And this is, you know, in the very early 80s, and it was really the talk of the town. High fructose corn syrup was the greatest thing, you know, since sliced bread, you know, and so I'm learning, you know, that this is what I want to do. I want to learn how to modify foods so that we can make more of them. All right. So I'll talk about what the consequences of that in a minute. I just want to go to one last thing, one last source of sweetener that has glucose and fructose, but they're not in the same molecule. And that's something weird. It's called invert sugar. And the only reason why I want to bring this up is because invert sugar is that soft center of the hard candy. I hate that soft center of the hard candy, right? When I eat hard candy, I just want it to be hard all the way through. It has like a terrible mouthfeel, but that's what invert sugar is. It's that soft center of the hard candy. I don't mind Tootsie Pop so much, but that soft center of the hard candy, that's just like weird. But anyway, that is my final example of fructose and glucose in the same food that you're eating as separate molecules. All right, so now we're going to talk more. We're going to kind of segue more and focus on a little bit of fructose. All right, so where also do we find fructose in addition to agave? All right, it's you know, a primary sugar found in fruit. All right, but you know, if you're going to try and manage your blood sugar, or if you're just going to pay attention, even if you don't have a problem, you really need to have a fundamental understanding of how much sugar is found in the fruits that we eat. So I always like to start with berries, because berries actually have the least amount of sugar, and that's why they're better for you if you're trying to regulate your blood sugar. So blueberries, to me, are like a superfood. Blueberries all the way. Blackberries, but they tend to be expensive. And then strawberries and raspberries and things like that. But berries, just about great for everyone. All right? I like, apples and pears, but they actually have a lot of fructose. Oh, and by the way, the berries, not only do they have the least amount of sugar, but they have, glucose and fructose separate from sucrose in equal amounts and very little sucrose, whereas apples have a whopping amount of fructose. All right, apples, believe it or not, have almost as much fructose, the really sweet stuff, as grapes, and you all know how sweet grapes are. But the cool thing about apples and pears, which also have a lot of fructose, is that they also have a lot of fiber, right? And that's a carbohydrate, so that's kind of germane to this discussion, right? So the fiber in the apples The reason why it's so important, if you're trying to regulate your blood sugar, to get fiber into your diet, is that the fiber delays the absorption of the sugar into your blood, so you don't get that big spike of glucose. So that's why apples and pears are okay. All right. And then finally, I'll talk about the fruits that actually have kind of a lot of sugar. So the fruits that actually have the most sugar are bananas and grapes. So all my diabetics, I kind of, you know, everybody tells, you know, when I ask them, what are your favorite fruits? Everybody tells me bananas. Everybody says bananas, right? Bananas, when you're, and the reason probably why you like them so much is that when you digest a banana, it you make more of a hormone called serotonin, which is a feel-good hormone. So bananas do make you feel a little bit better. And I totally get that because I think that that's really true, right? But bananas have a lot of total amount of sugar. They don't really have, like, say, the you know, the phytonutrient, all the antioxidants. So the reason why I love blueberries is because the antioxidant content is so high. Antioxidants protect your DNA and all kinds of great things. Bananas don't really have the antioxidant content of, say, blueberries. And they don't really have the fiber content of apples and pears. So I need to pull back on bananas. If you tell me it's your favorite, it's your favorite fruit, I might let you have, like, a half banana every other day. But, you know, there's people that have, like, one or two bananas every day. We're gonna nip that habit in the bud. And then, of course, you have grapes that are very, very high in total amount of sugar, right? Lots of fructose, lots of glucose. Grapes actually have a lot of antioxidants. You know, think about it. Grapes is like our ancestral fruit. We've been eating grapes for like thousands of years. Think about Julius Caesar eating the grapes, right? We've been eating grapes for so long, and they got us here. So if they got us here this long, you know, for this many years, they must be okay for you. And it is that they have some special antioxidants that we'll talk about another time. So even if you are diabetic, I'll let you eat like 15 grapes a day. All right, that's your allotment. All right, so the other part of understanding how your body regulates your blood sugar is understanding how you metabolize sugar. All right, so let's just start with sucrose. So sucrose, you have to break it down. Your body breaks sucrose down into its constituent molecules, which is glucose and fructose. Right. So glucose that's what your body uses to make energy. So if you're like, you know, walking around or exercising vigorously, your body needs to have glucose on board to fuel your body to do all those different things. Fructose, on the other hand, is not recognized by the body as a form of energy. Your body does not use fructose. It goes right to the liver. So whereas glucose goes into your blood, fructose goes into the liver, where it then has to be processed to something that your body can utilize. So hold that thought. I'm going to talk about it, in a few more minutes. All right. But glucose, so, so important to fuel your body. So, you know, as soon as you consume, you know, food, right, the blood sugar goes up, all right? And that sugar, like, goes to your muscles so that you can do work with your muscles, and it goes into your brain, all right? When you feel in, like, that 3 o'clock in the afternoon, you're feeling, like, that brain fog, that's a sign that the sugar is coming down. But we'll get back to that in a minute. All right, so the glucose, you're going to use that for exercise. And I just want you to know that I think I've mentioned this before. When you're just, like, when you're sitting and really not doing anything, you know, believe it or not, when you're completely at rest, your body is relying on fat stores. You're actually burning fat when you're at rest. It's not until you actually start and get off the chair and move around a little bit where your body is going to start using your glucose, those carbs, all right? And then when you're exercising really, really hard, when you're running or all out, this morning I was spinning this morning, all right? That's when you're using glucose. But if you're not doing those things, right, if you're not giving your body any reason to use the glucose, it's going to be stored in one of two places. The sugar is going to be stored in your liver, all right, but your liver can only store so much. right? It can only store about 2,000 calories, which is roughly 500 grams of glucose, right? Above that amount, in general, it gets converted to fat, right? So that's why, you know, this habit of, like, constantly eating, you know, is so, you know, just facilitates all that fat storage. So what happens? We eat a meal, the blood sugar goes up, and really you need to wait at least 4 hours to let that blood sugar come down, all right? So about roughly 2 hours after a meal, you'll start to get hungry again, right? But instead of waiting until you're not, you know, until it's time for the next meal, we'll go and get a snack, right? And we go and get a snack, and what happens is before the glucose comes all the way down, it goes right back up. So more glucose gets stored as fat because we've already exceeded our storage capacity in the liver, right? And this is why, you know, the way that we eat, you know, the standard American diet makes us gain so much weight. And then, you know, in case you're wondering, like, for the few people that, you know, do tend to be high energy and, you know, don't have a problem managing your weight, you might be thinking, well, what happens when, in those rare occasions when you do run out of glucose, right? Maybe if you're a long distance runner or if you're exercising for hours at a time. Not to worry. Your body has two mechanisms for making sugar, so that on its own, which is what happens overnight, you know, maybe, you know, during the night, you do end up burning all your glucose. Well, your body makes glucose from scratch, all right? Or, remember I told you how glucose was stored in the liver? All right, that glucose can be released from the liver so that the blood sugar will go back up. Right? And if you've already tapped all your glucose stores in your liver, you can make it from scratch. So you should never worry about not having enough glucose. All right, so that's how we use glucose. How do we use fructose, that really sweet stuff? All right, fructose is not a form of energy. It just goes right to the liver, and it needs to be converted into something your body does recognize as energy. And that's a huge burden on the body. You know, I guess when you're young and you have a healthy liver, no big deal, you know, all these little kids running around with the high fructose corn syrup, you know, they have healthy livers, they can manage it, your body knows exactly what to do, but, you know, over the course of a lifetime, by the time you're, you know, in the throes of being an adult, because, you know, this high fructose corn syrup is so easy to make, and because food manufacturers, you know, have, you know, put it in everything, you've probably consumed a lot more high fructose corn syrup than you even, you know, thought you did. All right, and then, of course, we add, you know, fructose itself to things because it's sweet to food, because it's very sweet, and you know, you have high fructose corn syrup, and then you also still have fructose, right? So manufacturers, you know, can put it in anything that they want. So after a lifetime of all this fructose, your liver is really getting tired. It's really getting tired, and it contributes to metabolic diseases. But there's some other physiological effects that we've noticed, all right? You know, it adversely impacts the way your body metabolizes fats. Well, we're not going to talk about fats today. We'll do that another time, right? But it talks about, you know, I mean, it affects the way the body, promotes the way your body clears fat from the blood. And it also raises, you know, it raises blood sugar because it impacts the way your body can deal with the glucose. So even though the body uses glucose for energy, you know, if it's too busy dealing with the fructose, it's not going to have time to think about what to do with the glucose. And so you'll end up having elevated blood sugar anyway. The other thing that fructose does, and I never really thought about this, is that because fructose is not used for energy, it doesn't stimulate the hormones that your body needs to recognize that you've eaten a meal. So there's a hormone, there's many hormones, but one of them is leptin, and leptin regulates your appetite. So leptin promotes the feeling of fullness. That's called satiety, right? So fructose doesn't stimulate the production of leptin. And so when you're consuming more fructose, your body doesn't have all the cues to say, all right, you're done eating. And the other thing that fructose does is, since you're not using it for energy and, you know, it's such a burden on your liver, it's more readily converted to fat. I told you that glucose that you're not burning for energy is converted to fat. Well, fructose is even more readily converted to fat. All right, so we really need to think about fructose in our diet. And again, though, when it comes to fruits, right, even though fruits are high in fructose, like apples and pears, don't forget that the fiber in fruits delays that absorption, so you don't have that same kind of effect. I'm going to end this part of the segment on sugar substitutes. So the other thing I really want you to pull back from your diet is artificial sweeteners, no matter what. I know that the American Diabetes Association, it loves promoting consumption of sucralose, but that's just not for me. All these artificial sweeteners, just like the fructose, also have to be metabolized by the liver, and that's a huge, huge burden. And it's just so metabolically challenging, and we have studies that are published in, like, you know, high-tier journals, like this journal called Nature, which, like, it doesn't really get much more relevant than that when you publish something in Nature that shows that consumption of artificial sweeteners impairs glucose metabolism, so that you'll end up having, elevated blood sugar, and also is really bad for the bacteria that live in your gut. So I'm going to talk about the microbiome one of these days, but just know that the bacteria that live in your gut, they're there, they support your immune system, they help you extract nutrients from the foods that you're eating, and they help with digestion, and they do not eat artificial sweeteners. So just, you know, no reason to have artificial sweeteners in your diet. If you want to have a little bit of stevia, you know, stevia is a plant, and the leaves just happen to be very sweet. I'm okay with stevia, but the Truvia and the stuff that's in the packets, I just know that stevia is processed, and it has an off flavor that's probably due to some of the anti-caking agents that we use. So if you want to use stevia, just grow your own plant. You could buy a plant at Lowe's and just use the leaves. Put the leaves in your tea. Put the leaves in fruit salads and things like that. Just know that stevia is a plant that just happens to have a very sweet taste. Totally different from glucose. Doesn't look anything like it. But, I mean, you know, it's a plant, and plants have all kinds of good things. So there's some other benefits to using stevia leaves. So I'm going to end this segment for now. We're going to go to a break. And when we come back, I'm going to focus more on diabetes and the sequelae and consequences of elevated blood sugar.
Paleo, gluten-free, ketogenic, eating for your blood type, and the list goes on and on. There are millions of fad diets out there, but what really works? Did you ever consider consulting an actual doctor? That's why you need Dr. L. Dr. Laura Rakos at Eagle Rock Nutrition is a food scientist with over 30 years of experience helping people improve their health. Eagle Rock Nutrition is a healthcare practice providing dietary and lifestyle guidance for disease prevention and health maintenance. She will help you use diet and exercise to improve your overall health and fight disease. Conditions that may be addressed include diabetes, heart disease, obesity, autoimmune diseases, poor gut health, and fertility. Dr. L also has a very popular sports nutrition program. Get started today. Book an appointment at eaglerock.com. That's EGGLROCK.com. Or call 908-764-9062. 908-764-9062. Let Dr. L develop a personalized health plan that's right for you. Eat Right with Laura. Most services are covered by Medicare, Medicaid, and private health insurance.
The Entrepreneurial Think Tank for Women, or ETT Women, is a support network to help female entrepreneurs grow their business. Founders Vanessa Coppice and Lynette Barbieri share their vision of mentoring women to achieve their personal and business goals. Members attend live or virtual meetings, as well as their annual conference, The Power of Connections, scheduled for November 3rd to the 5th at the Holiday Inn in Clark, New Jersey. For more information, please visit ettwomen.com. That's ettwomen.com. WOMEN.com. ETT Women. Together we achieve more. We invite you to support the ETT Women Foundation, a New Jersey nonprofit organization dedicated to the support of women in need. On Saturday, July 15th, the foundation will be hosting a 70s and 80s summer celebration fundraiser at the Fireside Bar and Grill, located at 133 South Main Street in Marlboro, New Jersey. The event begins at 6:30 p.m. A portion of the proceeds will benefit Janet Vega and her fight against cancer. Please register at ettwomen.com. That's ettwomen.com.
Hello, I'm Anthony Marchetta, Executive Director of the New Jersey Housing and Mortgage Finance Agency. Tired of paying rent or living with family? Ready to own your own home but need help with your down payment and closing costs? Take advantage of our forgivable loan programs today and make your dream of homeownership in New Jersey a reality. Discover your options at theroadhomenj.com. That's theroadhomenj.com. Here's Tiffany, who took advantage of one of our loan programs.
Hi, I'm Tiffany from Burlington County. My husband and I are happy homeowners today because of the tremendous help we received with our down payment and closing costs. We were able to buy much sooner than we ever thought possible, and it made a huge difference in our lives.
So get started today and check out our loan programs by visiting our website at theroadhomenj.com. That's theroadhomenj.com.
This message sponsored by the New Jersey Housing and Mortgage Finance Agency, the New Jersey Broadcasters Association, and this station.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Eat Right with Laura. So now I'm going to talk about insulin, which I probably should have brought up sooner, but I'm going to bring it up now. So we're just talking about, like, you know, the way that we eat and, you know, used to be the way that we eat in the United States, but now it's, diabetes is a global epidemic. So it's really just the way everyone in the world is now eating. Our bodies are really designed for famine, right? When you think about it, we've only really had food for, like, since 1940 is probably when the first supermarket opened up. So we've never really had abundance of food. And so now we've gone into this habit of eating frequently. So what happens is the sugar comes up, right? You eat a meal, your blood sugar goes up. And then what happens, all right? Your pancreas secretes insulin, which is a hormone that you use to take the sugar out of the blood and bring it to your muscles so that you're strong, like I said before, and to your brain so that you can think. The thing is you have to let the insulin come down. The other thing that insulin does so well is that that's a hormone that tells your body to store fat. Because every time you eat a meal, your body thinks, oh, I think a famine must be coming, so store fat. So the insulin is one of the hormones that tells your body to store fat. That insulin needs to come down. So like I said before, if you don't let the sugar and the insulin come down, even if you go and have just like a teeny tiny snack, just anything, like something carbohydrate, that sugar is going to go right back up. There are some foods that you can have that might not do that, but typically the foods that we gravitate towards between meals, the snacky kinds of foods, are foods that are high in carbohydrates. After, you know, years of making your pancreas secrete the insulin, eventually, over time, as we start gaining weight, over time, the insulin's going to stop working. The insulin's going to go up, but it's not going to do its job. It's not going to take the sugar out of the blood. It's going to make you store fat, but it doesn't take the sugar out of the blood so that the sugar remains high. So once you're diagnosed as being insulin resistant, that's when you're diabetic, right? And you really just don't want to get to that point. You have to train yourself, you know, to eat in such a way that the sugar and the insulin goes up and that it goes down. You don't want that insulin to be chronically secreted from your pancreas. The other thing, though, that insulin does is that it's very, you know, inflammatory, and it coerces your body to make, you know, things that cause inflammation, and you don't really want that either. So that description right there, that's type 2. That's officially the definition for type 2 diabetes. Not to be confused with type 1 diabetes, which is actually an autoimmune disease where your body self-destructs your pancreas. So the pancreas has special cells called beta cells, and those are the cells that make the insulin. So in type 1 diabetes, you're just not making insulin at all. In type 2 diabetes, you make plenty of insulin, but it's not doing its job. treatments for the two diseases are pretty different. In type 2 diabetes, so long as you haven't really gotten to complete destruction of your pancreas, you know, over time, and you can take, you know, drugs before you have to take insulin to bring the sugar down. But in type 1 diabetes, because you don't really have a fully functional pancreas, your only recourse is to take insulin by injection. And in case you don't know this, the reason why you can't just take a pill, the reason why it's an injection is insulin is very different from the drugs that you're typically accustomed to taking, like aspirin. It's not a small molecule. Size-wise, it's much, much, much bigger. It's about 100 times bigger in size, maybe a little less, but in those orders. If you were to ingest, take insulin by mouth, all the, you know, the enzymes, the proteases, and all the enzymes in your digestive system would degrade it before it could do its job. So you have to take insulin by injection and inject it right into your bloodstream. There's no other way of getting around it. I do want to say that I did work on something pretty cool, an artificial pancreas, which is being developed by the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation. And that's a pretty cool project because that's going to let people that have type 1 diabetes, instead of having to chase their blood sugar with insulin all the time, the artificial pancreas, which is not really like a transplant, so that's not what that means. You know, it's you know, something that they can wear that can respond to their blood sugar, so they're not always chasing their dose of insulin. So specifically, what are some of the meds that type 2 diabetes patients end up taking? All right, so initially, if you're making insulin, or if you make plenty of insulin but it's just not working, you might take a drug like metformin, which is called an insulin sensitizer. So it allows the insulin that you are making, and you're probably making plenty of it, do its job. You know, over time, you know, I told you before that over time, after making, you know, tons and tons and tons of insulin because you're eating so many carbs, right, it just stops doing its job. So you take metformin to overcome that insulin resistance. Another category of drugs are drugs that actually increase insulin production. So maybe if you have type 2 diabetes, you know, maybe your body's just exhausted, the pancreas just is not secreting enough. Like in type 1, you're not secreting any at all. But in type 2, maybe you're not making enough, or you have a little bit of both problems. You have insulin resistance, so you need to have a little bit more insulin on board to overcome that insulin resistance. So there's some drugs that make you do that. The third category is, all right, so now you're diabetic or even pre-diabetic. You're diabetic and you have chronically elevated blood sugar because the insulin's not taking the sugar out of the blood. So there are family of drugs that allow you to lower your blood sugar naturally. So that's like that Januvia. I kind of, you know, worked on that subtly in my former life. So there are drugs that allow you to lower your blood sugar because the reason why you don't want to have chronically elevated sugar, I guess I didn't talk about that, there are some pretty serious consequences of having elevated blood sugar. So when the sugar is really high all the time, all right, what happens is it starts to modify, you know, proteins in your body so that your cells are not working properly. So a consequence of that is nerve damage, right? Neuropathy and retinopathy. So neuropathy is like tingling in your extremities, in your fingers and your toes, which is why diabetics sometimes end up having to have amputations of their fingers and toes. And retinopathy, which affects the eye, the retina, or, you know, ultimately end organ damage. So a lot of diabetics end up having kidney damage. And something else that's really bad that is a problem for both type 2 diabetics and type 1 diabetics with that chronically elevated blood sugar, right? So if your body, ultimately, if your body is not using glucose to make, you know, energy, right, it will start burning fat. And that's really a very effective weight loss strategy. I'll give you that, you know, burning fat to lose weight. But what happens is you make ketone bodies from fatty acids. You're burning fats to make energy. You're not burning glucose to make energy. And a side product of that are ketone bodies. And when your body makes lots of ketone bodies, it changes the pH of your blood. The pH of your blood drops, all right, and the proteins in your body start to denature because they're not right at the right pH. And that's a condition called ketoacidosis, and that can be life-threatening. That's when you go into a diabetic coma. And so you definitely don't want to do that. I actually had, I saw a patient this week who like was losing tons and tons of weight, and I don't know if she knew, understood why. And so I had to explain this to her that the weight loss was probably not a good sign. She needed to see her endocrinologist right away. But when you get to that point when the drugs are not working, the drugs that either increase your insulin production or the drugs that are insulin sensitizers or the drugs that lower your blood sugar, when they stop working, oh, there's one more drug I wanted to talk about. It's a new category. These are drugs that allow you to excrete the sugar from your body. So you're urinating the glucose out of your body. So that's pretty effective, right? That's pretty effective, except that all that sugar going out, coming out your body, who likes sugar, bacteria. So if you're taking one of those drugs that promote excretion of sugar from your body, they work on glucose transporters. Those drugs have one of the side effects is urinary tract infection. So you definitely want to be careful with that. But once those three categories of drugs, when they stop working, now and your blood sugar is not coming down, now your doctor is probably going to ask you if you're a type 2 diabetic to start taking insulin injections. The same way as the type 1 diabetic has to take the insulin injections. They have no recourse. They have to take the insulin injection. But one thing that I do want to say about a type 1 diabetic is that because it's an autoimmune disease, they may not necessarily, be overweight or have any issues metabolically. They just have this one irritating problem, and that's that they don't make insulin. So if they're exercising and they have a healthy diet and they take their insulin injections, as needed, they can live a long, healthy life, and a lot of, I know a few type 1 diabetics, and they are seemingly, much healthier than my patients who have, metabolic disease, which is, cardiovascular disease, obesity, those diabetics, are suffering far more than some of the people that I know that have type 1 diabetes. So whether you have type 1 or type 2, what can you do dietarily to manage your blood sugar? So that's why people come to see me. I know I spent a lot of time kind of educating you all on what is sugar, what is diabetes. So now I'm going to talk about what you should be eating. How can you use nutrition to manage your blood sugar? Very easily, just having a very good understanding of the difference between high glycemic index foods and low glycemic index foods. So if a food has a high glycemic index, like, white bread, those are the foods that are going to raise your blood sugar right away the most. And once the blood sugar goes up, if the blood sugar spikes immediately, then the insulin is going to spike immediately. All right. But if you're focused on foods that have low glycemic index, like vegetables, the blood sugar is not going to go up, the insulin's not going to spike, and you're not going to have that biggest stress on your pancreas constantly demanding that it secrete insulin for you. So all of my diabetic patients and my pre-diabetic patients, I teach them how to follow a low glycemic index diet. And quite frankly, once you understand what a healthy portion size is, it really doesn't matter how much, like with vegetables and low glycemic index foods. I do focus on, just eat, a handful of this and a handful of that. But honestly, if you did overeat a little bit, any one of those categories, you probably wouldn't have as big an impact on your overall health. So what does my typical low glycemic index diet? So if you're listening now and you're taking notes, now is a good time to take notes. All right. I always walk my patients through the meal plan first with protein. right? You want to eat protein at every meal because, one, it has a low glycemic index, so it's not going to spike your blood sugar. And protein takes longer to digest than any other macronutrient, so you will stay fuller longer in between meals. All right, and there's two kinds of proteins. There's animal protein and there's vegetable protein. And while, of course, I'd like everybody to be vegetarian, that's not really practical, and I probably lose the majority of my patient population. So if you are going to consume animal proteins, make sure that they're clean. Make sure that they're hormone-free and antibiotic-free. And I'll tell you, you know, we'll focus on, you know, clean eating probably at the next show. But if you're going to eat vegetable protein, I do want to say that soy, like tofu, so we'll actually have a really detailed discussion on soy. But I do like soy, except that soy is, you know, a crop in the United States that's largely genetically modified. 95-99% of the soybean crop in the United States is genetically modified. So if you're going to eat tofu and soy, just make sure that it's organic, not genetically modified. It's an excellent source of protein because the amino acid distribution. So proteins are made up of amino acids, and the distribution of amino acids in soybeans mirrors that which you find in animals. Now, it's not that you can't, if you're a vegetarian, you're not going to get all your amino acids. You just need to make sure that you're eating a variety of plant-based foods. But if you're eating soy, you can be sure that you're getting all of those amino acids. So that's my guidance on protein. Eat protein with every meal. Eat legumes. What are legumes? Legumes are beans, all right? And beans are very high in protein, and they're high in fiber, all right? And fiber actually lowers blood sugar. So love to have at least one serving is a half a cup, so one or two servings of beans every day. The next category is dairy, non-dairy. So I kind of introduce non-dairy alternatives to some of my patients that might be not in the know on that category. So there's dairy, you want non-fat milk, if you're trying to lose weight, and non-dairy sources. There's tons of non-dairy sources that are very good quality. So you can make milks from, nuts like almonds and hazelnuts. You can make milk from coconut. There's coconut milk. Oat milk. I love oatmeal milk. There is rice milk, but if you're diabetic, rice has a very high glycemic index, so I might not recommend that one. And hemp, milks from hemp. So and then there's yogurt, which I really like. So yogurt is a fermented, a fermented food, right? And the bacteria in the yogurt is so good for you. The bacteria, again, those bacteria will help to lower your blood sugar, extract the nutrients from the foods that you're eating. So I always recommend consumption of fermented foods like yogurt. And if you do eat non-dairy, there are non-dairy yogurts made from almond milk and coconut milk that also tastes very good. The next category of low glycemic index foods are nuts and seeds. So I kind of push the walnuts and the almonds, pulling back on the cashews. So cashews, by the way, if you didn't know, have like way more carbs than the other nuts. So unless you're trying to gain weight, I'll probably pull the cashews from your diet. And seeds are so good for you. So I always talk about eating chia seeds, chia, right? Put chia seeds in your cereal to bump up your the protein content of your breakfast. And then I probably will share some of my recipes for making overnight oatmeal, overnight oats with chia seeds. And then flaxseed, which are high in omega-3. So omega-3s are very anti-inflammatory, largely found in fish, but you can also find them in flaxseed and algae. We'll talk about that another time. But, if you're looking for vegan sources of omega-3, very anti-inflammatory, you can probably find that from algae sources. All right, and then where the rubber meets the road is in consumption of vegetables. That's the thing that needs to change. Your typical American might eat a vegetable at lunch and a vegetable at dinner. That simply is not enough. There's two kinds of vegetables. There's non-starchy vegetables, right, which is where all the goods are, and there's starchy vegetables. I want you to have five half-cup servings of non-starchy vegetables a day. That's like, you know, the greens, broccoli, Brussels, the, you know, cruciferous vegetables, cauliflower, leafy greens, eat the rainbow, red peppers, yellow peppers, eggplants. We'll talk about nightshade vegetables some other time, but, you know, if you like eggplant, yes, eggplant all the way. Anything, eat the rainbow, you know, and a half cup is not even that big. A half cup is like a teeny tiny circle as far as I'm concerned. So I want you to eat 5 half-cup servings of vegetables, non-starchy vegetables every day. Although if it's something that's big and bulky like broccoli, you have to eat like a cup of that. And even a cup isn't even that much. All right. And then second category, starchy vegetables. So what are your starchy vegetables? So still very good for you. Carrots, beets. Beets are a superfood. I know they're starchy. People say, oh, I'm not supposed to eat beets, but beets have so much going on. There are so many nutrients in beets that it would be a crime not to eat beets. And if you feel like they're too earthy, you know, they taste like dirt, look for golden beets, the yellow ones. They're a little bit less earthy. I had a great friend of mine come into the office, and we did a cooking with beets demo. So that was BG. She was great. So hopefully she'll come back and do that again. Other starchy vegetables are, you know, your potatoes. So I want you to eat sweet potatoes or red potatoes. But this is what I want to tell you about potatoes, white potatoes, all right, in particular. If you bake a potato or if you boil a potato, the starch in the potato changes. After you boil a potato, bake a potato, and then cool it, let it get cold. So put it in the refrigerator. That causes the starch to change. All right, the starch becomes what's called resistant. And resistant starch is very effective for lowering blood sugar, also very good for your gut health. And I want you to know that the FDA recently approved the use of resistant starch for lowering blood sugar. So this is not hype at all. What else is a starchy vegetable? Oh, your winter squashes, like butternut squash. So the summer squashes, like the yellow and the green, that's a non-starchy. The butternut squash, that's a winter. So you can only have like 1 or 2 servings of starchy vegetables. So don't overdo it on your starchy vegetable. Everybody likes carrots. You can have 12 baby carrots. That's a lot. That's generous. 12 baby carrots is 1 starchy vegetable. All right, so that's pretty good. Use those to, like, you know, dip in your, like, guacamole and your hummus. Next category, fruit. All right, fruit, it's okay. Listen, no one ever became diabetic from eating too much fruit. My typical patient, I'll tell them, eat 3 pieces of fruit a day. That's 3 half cup servings. You know, when you go to the grocery store, you'll see these, you know, pretty big apples and oranges. All the fruits are so big. That's probably like 2 servings right there, unless it's like small. So just think 3 half cup servings of fruit. Pull back on those bananas and probably also those pineapples as well. Pineapples are also very high in sugar, so no pineapples. And then next category is grains, all right? So what kind of grains am I going to let you eat? All right, whole grains, not processed grains. All right, so my favorite whole grains are like oatmeal, quinoa. Can't say enough things about quinoa. So quinoa, you cook it just like rice, so you can have brown rice or wild rice. All right, but quinoa is in a category all by itself. It's really not even a grain, technically. It's a grass seed that's very high in protein. It has the highest protein content of any known grain. So if you cook it right, you will really enjoy it. I usually like to add quinoa to salads. I like to, like, you know, saute up some vegetables and put the quinoa in the vegetables. I like to add it to soup. I don't typically eat it like rice. Like, rice wouldn't taste good if you just ate a bowl of rice alone. If you ate a bowl of quinoa alone, you feel like it needs something. So put it in your salad. You could even, like, uncooked, you can toast the quinoa and put that in your salad. That tastes pretty good, too. All right, next category, healthy fat. People really underappreciate the importance of fat in the diet. Not fat from animal protein like steak. Fat from, like, healthy sources like olives, olive oil, coconut oil, avocados. Avocados, like beets, also a superfood. Broccoli is also a superfood. Avocados are a superfood. You just can't overdo it. So I usually tell my patients I want to see you have 6 teaspoons of healthy fat a day. Other healthy fats are like sesame oil, grapeseed oil. Just look for good quality of those oils. You can cook in olive oil. You can even like cook your animal proteins in coconut oil. I like to finish roasted vegetables. Like if you roast, cut up some vegetables, roast them. Finish that off with a drizzle of sesame oil. You could put a little bit of grapeseed oil in your salad. There's some other boutique-y kind of oils. The walnut oil is very good. Avocado oil is very good. Those are a little pricey, though, so that's why they're not on my food list, just because I don't want to break anybody's budget or bank. And then finally, in my low glycemic index meal plan, we're eating herbs. Herbs, very anti-inflammatory, very good for overall health, lots of health benefits. What are your favorite herbs? Mine are certainly basil and oregano, because I'm Italian, a little. My mom's Italian, love basil and oregano, love cilantro. You either like it or you don't. I'm one of those people that really likes cilantro a lot. Just started really falling in love with mint because I've been growing it now for the past couple of years. Love that. Just get some herbs. And then finally, fluids. You need to have a drink water. 6 to 8 cups of water a day. Herbal teas, caffeine-free if you know, the caffeine bothers you. If you are a coffee drinker, right, you can have 1 cup of coffee a day. But really, I'm telling you, you really don't need to put sugar in tea or coffee or anything. 2 days, give me 2 days, don't put sugar in your coffee and tea. You wouldn't even notice the difference. I don't drink my coffee with sugar. And it's funny, like my husband and my kids will always steal a sip of my coffee and then tell me how yucky it tastes because it doesn't have sugar. Well, now, you know what? They're not putting sugar in their coffee either, right? So I've weaned everybody off of putting sugar in the coffee. And if I can do it, you can do it too. And so I'm going to like end the segment talking about carb counting. So I didn't used to teach my patients how to count carbs, but the endocrinologists have been sending my patients back to me asking if I could teach them how to count carbs. So basically, just know that I want you to eat roughly 50 grams of carbs at every meal. A serving, which is basically whatever fits in the palm of your hand, like a half cup fits in the palm of your hand, that's typically 15 grams. So what are the things that are, you know, 15 grams of carbs? That's your grains, fruit, starchy vegetables. It's even your dairy. Dairy is really 12 grams, but just say, just round it up to 15 because it's easier. All right, so a serving of, you know, just about everything except for healthy fat and protein. All right, a serving of everything except for healthy fat and protein is about 15 grams of carbs, and I want you to have 50 grams of carbs at every meal. And the advantage of having the same number of carbs at every meal is that it helps you regulate your blood sugar so that you're not chasing your dose of meds or chasing your dose of insulin. You know, the sugar is not rising in different amounts with every meal. So if you could eat the same amount of carbs at every meal, you'll have a more even blood sugar. I'd like to end by thanking you for listening to me. One more thing I do want to say that I have all my diabetics starting their morning with some water and apple cider vinegar, which slows the absorption of the sugar, much like the way fiber does. So we'll end it there. I just want to remind everybody that next week we'll be talking about the benefits of a Mediterranean meal plan, which is also very compatible with lowering blood sugar and also very compatible with weight loss. So if you'd like to learn more about these two topics, I will be giving a lecture at St. Paul's Roman Catholic Church on Sunday, July 9th at 1 p.m. I'm going to be giving a sports nutrition, so something totally different, a sports nutrition lecture at 2 Q's Cafe in Union, New Jersey on Thursday, July 13th. So if you'd like to stay abreast of my lectures and where I'm going to be talking, go to my website, eaglerock.com. That's eaglerock.com. And you can sign up for my newsletter so that you're apprised of all of my speaking engagements. Most of them are free and open to the community. So thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you next week about the Mediterranean meal plan. Stay tuned for Eat Right with Laura.
paleo, gluten-free, ketogenic, eating for your blood type, and the list goes on and on. There are millions of fad diets out there, but what really works? Did you ever consider consulting an actual doctor? That's why you need Dr. L. Dr. Laura Rakos at Eagle Rock Nutrition is a food scientist with over 30 years of experience helping people improve their health. Eagle Rock Nutrition is a healthcare practice providing dietary and lifestyle guidance for disease prevention and health maintenance. She will help you use diet and exercise to improve your overall health and fight disease. Conditions that may be addressed include diabetes, heart disease, obesity, autoimmune diseases, poor gut health, and fertility. Dr. L also has a very popular sports nutrition program. Get started today. Book an appointment at EagleRock.com. That's EGGLROCK.com. Or call 908-764-9062. 908-764-9062. Let Dr. L develop a personalized health plan that's right for you. Eat Right with Laura. Most services are covered by Medicare, Medicaid, and private health insurance.
The Entrepreneurial Think Tank for Women, or ETT Women, is a support network to help female entrepreneurs grow their business. Founders Vanessa Coppice and Lynette Barbieri share their vision of mentoring women to achieve their personal and business goals. Members attend live or virtual meetings as well as their annual conference, The Power of Connections, scheduled for November 3rd to the 5th at the Holiday Inn in Clark, New Jersey. For more information, please visit ettwomen.com. That's ettwomen, WOMEN.com. ETT Women. Together, we achieve more. We invite you to support the ETT Women Foundation, a New Jersey nonprofit organization dedicated to the support of women in need. On Saturday, July 15th, the foundation will be hosting a 70s and 80s summer celebration fundraiser at the Fireside Bar and Grill, located at 133 South Main Street in Marlboro, New Jersey. The event begins at 6:30 p.m. A portion of the proceeds will benefit Janet Vega in her fight against cancer. ettwomen.com. That's ettwomen, WOMEN.com.
The views and nutritional advice expressed by Dr. Rakos are not intended to be a substitute for conventional medical service. The preceding sound advice program was paid for by Eagle Rock Nutrition. The views and opinions expressed are not necessarily those of the staff, management, and advertisers of WMTR. It is always advisable to consult a professional before making a major medical decision.
We at WMTR.